Hi, this is Joe Patty. Thanks for listening to WRTI Online. This service is made possible through the support of WRTI's members. You can become a member, too. Since you're already online, just visit www.wrti.org and click the Become a Member link on the upper left corner of the webpage. You can also join us by phone at 1-866-809-9784. Your membership will help keep WRTI's broadcast and online services strong. And again, thank you. Now, on with the show.
We have with us today on Crossover an exceedingly gifted pianist, someone whom I kind of discovered by accident when he had been on an album of the music of Robert Casadesus, John Owings. Welcome to Crossover, John.
Thank you, Jill. It's nice to be here.
I think that probably doesn't give you the full justice that you should be getting as the star of our show today, but I did discover you because of your work with the music of Casadesus. Can you tell me a little bit about how that came about?
Yes, well, it's rather a long story, but I'll start from the beginning, which is, I guess, the best place to start.
That's right.
And that was in 1958. I was a student in high school at the time, 15 years old, and I'd won a local competition and was getting ready to play with the San Antonio Symphony. And lo and behold, Robert Casadesus showed up at the rehearsal, and I had my photo taken with him, and he congratulated me, and the photo got in the paper, and all of this brouhaha was made over it. And I thought, wow, this is really terrific, because he was one of my idols, and he was performing that weekend the Emperor Concerto, and of course I was just thrilled to hear him play. But that was the first encounter with the Casadesus family. And then years later, in 1975, I entered and was lucky enough to win the first Robert Casadesus competition in Cleveland. And at that time, Robert had died, and this competition was started by his wife, Gabi, in his memory. And so I was introduced to Gabi, and then Therese, and then later Guy, and so got to know the whole family. And we had a lot of correspondence, and I saw them quite a bit after that. And then in 1999, I gave the U.S. premiere of Robert's 24 Preludes at Cooper Union in New York. And Gabi was there and liked my performance and suggested that I should record them. A few months later, she passed away at, I believe, almost 100 years old.
She was
most remarkable woman in so many ways, and a wonderful artist and great inspiration to so many people. So then the family took up her suggestion, and through the efforts of really all of the family, but especially Greco Casadesus, who has his own record company called Opus Millesime, the recording of the Preludes came about, as well as on that same disc some other work.
And, of course, people really were not aware of Casadesus as a composer, because he was such an outstanding pianist.
No, he kind of kept that to himself, although he always said, well, I'm a composer. But he didn't push his own works. He rarely programmed his own works on recitals. I mean, you rarely would hear a recital in which he played one of his own pieces.
Well, and I must say, this certainly brings up your excellence as an artist, because I had been really focused on him and the fact that he was not known as a composer, and then to hear an artist play the works and to be so impressed by the artist, which was you, or who was you, that I had to follow up and find out who you are, what you're doing. And of course, your credentials are outstanding. You were, again, a graduate of the Juilliard School. You studied with Madame Levine and also Martin Kanin.
Right.
And then you won Fulbright, of course. Mm-hmm. And, well, you had a gold medal, of course, with the piano competition, but you also won an international competition in Lisbon. Is that right?
The Viana D'Amata. Yes.
And then the London List Society competition and the Musical Arts competition in Chicago. And, of course, you have a prestigious chair at Texas Christian University.
Right,
is that
right.
correct? The great honor of having that. And a new album, which is quite interesting, Julius Rubka. Tell us a little bit about why, how this came about. Did you discover him again, you with your discoveries of unknown or unchampioned artists and composers?
Well, perhaps this is one of my missions in life.
Yes.
I don't know. Sort of happened that not only the Kasatasu works, which are, as you say, not very well known, but other discs I've made include works by Quincy Porter, who's another, you know, kind of not household name, but an outstanding composer. And the most recent one you mentioned, Julius Rubka, is practically unknown to, I guess, most everyone except organists, because of the large work he wrote for organ, which pretty much is in the standard organ repertoire.
And, of course, he had a very short life, right?
Very short life. He died at the age of 24, and as a result, wrote very little. But I really didn't know his works at all. The name was somewhere in the back of my mind, maybe from a keyboard lit class once upon a time. I'd heard the name, but that's about it. And my colleague, who's our organist at TCU, Joe Butler, just approached me one day and said, would you be interested in the possibility of recording Rubka's piano works? And I said, well, let me take a look at the music. And the music wasn't that easy to come by. We had to go through libraries and various channels just to get the music, because it's not published, and the piano music is not published. And so when I did look at the music, I found it fascinating. And I started working on it and said, this looks like a very challenging but interesting project. And so that's how it started. And then eventually we got a grant from TCU, and which helped finance the recording, and so it came about,
and it was just released. Yes, exactly. And it's available. Mm-hmm. How can one get this recording?
Well, the label is Pro Organo, and it's available, I believe, through any where you can buy recordings, Amazon.com.
Amazon.com,
sure,
as well. Now, when you say the music was not published, I mean, what happens then? Do you get manuscript? Or do you have to Xerox the manuscript?
No, there were copies of the original edition, which is out of print, but they were available through libraries. And then there was an updated edition, which I don't believe was ever published, but was available through library sources. So through some research and some legwork, we were able to get the music to these piano works, and they're really, I think, extremely interesting.
Now, he was a student of Liszt at some point, wasn't
he? He was a student of Liszt, yes. He studied in Berlin for a few years with Theodor Kulak, and then he was brought to the attention of Hans von Bülow, who was, of course, a prominent person in the Liszt circle. And von Bülow recommended him to Liszt, and it was on von Bülow's recommendation that Rubka went and studied with Liszt, studied not only piano but composition as well. And he was inspired by Liszt to write this humongous sonata. I mean, it's practically 30 minutes long. It's very much modeled in scale and in design and in piano texture, you might say, on Liszt's own B minor sonata.
It goes beyond that, I think you said.
Well,
in terms of creativity,
it's probably got more octaves. I think it's got more octaves than any piece I've ever played. It's extraordinarily demanding,
difficult.
Just in terms of stamina, and certainly, I mean, you can say it sounds a little bit like Liszt, but at the same time, it's the work of an individual with his own voice, his own personality.
So he goes beyond, or just creatively new material that's coming from him, but still in the same period. Is that right?
Well, I don't know that I could say it goes beyond Liszt, but in some ways it does. In in some of the harmonic progressions that are very daring and
for the
times
period,
almost remind you of later music, even Scriabin at times. So I suppose that one could say that if Rojbke had lived, who knows what direction he would have taken. But if this is any indication of his inclinations and his ability, he certainly would have written some very, very interesting music.
What was your reaction when you saw the music?
I thought, oh my God, this is going to be a lot of work. And it certainly was.
Has anyone else ever played this on, in recital or in a concert?
Yes, it does appear rarely, but it does appear, and it has been recorded before this recording. But what's kind of a first with this recording is it's the first CD of Rojbke's entire works for keyboard, his organ works and his piano works on one CD.
Now a little bit about Rojbke. He was a pianist, wasn't he?
And an organist.
Well, I know that I read that his father was probably
an organ
the most
builder.
Famous organ
mm-hmm.
builder in Germany.
Right.
But was he as proficient on both instruments?
I believe he was. I believe he was. To write the way he did for the organ, he must have been equally gifted on the organ as on the piano.
Gifted, and he had a devilish streak, I guess. He wanted to see if people could play his music, I suppose.
Right.
So now, is this the first of many of Rojbke's works that you will be doing?
Well, as I say, this is the entire output. So this CD contains his scherzo, mazurka, and sonata, and that's the entire output for piano.
I see.
So there is no more.
There is no more, and this is really quite an incredible collection, and certainly for a collector and for people who are interested in I guess unusual
in unusual music of the German Romantic period.
It is the German Romantic period. John, you've sparingly released recordings. Do you have any other things that you are thinking about that you're going to unearth?
Well, there are a lot of things I'm thinking about, but right now I'm involved in several projects with the trio that I work with, two of my colleagues here at TCU, violist Misha Galaganov and clarinetist Gary Whitman. We have a trio, viola, clarinet, and piano, called Trio Con Brio. And because the standard repertoire for that combination of instruments is quite small, you have just the few works, the famous Mozart, so-called Kegelstadt trio, some pieces by Schumann, some pieces by Bruch, and Reinecke wrote a trio. And beyond that, you have to go hunting. And there are a few 20th century works for that combination of instruments, and we've played those. And so we've begun to get composers to write pieces for us. I say commission, but commission sometimes means you've got lots of money to spend, and we don't. So we somehow ask composers who are willing to write works for us, and we've had over half a dozen works written for us that we've premiered. And one of the works which was commissioned by the TCU School of Music was a trio by the Juilliard composer Eric Ewazin. And our trio performed that in New York in Weill Hall a couple of years ago, and we're now in the process of recording it. In fact, we have recorded it, but it hasn't been put on, the final product hasn't been released yet. So that's one kind of work in progress. And then we're currently learning a work by an Israeli composer that was written for us. It's called Venice Suite, and it's concerto grosso for three players and nine instruments. So I have the task of playing not only piano, but harpsichord, celeste, and musical glasses filled with wine.
Are they always filled, or do you...
They are always filled until the end, and at the end, we drink the wine.
You need the wine, I think.
Yes. So this is another project.
Oh, I just think that you are inspired to do offbeat things and bring wonderful new discoveries to the public. Now, when do you have time to to coach your piano students?
Oh, well, I mean, that is what I live for. I mean, I love teaching, and that's really my life. And it keeps you sane, I think. I mean, because our lives are often so isolated. I mean, spending time on our instrument.
Yes, practicing.
Working with and practicing and studying music, but working with talented young people is just it's so much fun and so rewarding. And my wife and I recently took in a young Korean boy who lives with us, and we're his legal guardians. And he's also my student. He's a sophomore at TCU, and he's all of age 13.
Oh, my. He must be brilliant.
So when you have the chance to work with young talents and help mold them and guide them, it's a responsibility and a challenge, but it's very rewarding.
What is the, from your perspective, of course, you're preparing students to go out into the world to become artists. What is the scene, the artistic scene? What does it have to offer? It's certainly not the same as it was when you started.
No.
And if anything, it has gotten less, I guess, accessible, because certainly being a soloist is very difficult, and the whole scene is very, very difficult now.
The whole scene is very, very difficult, and I mean, one can look at it and just get totally depressed and discouraged and think, why in the world are we encouraging these people to even consider making music their profession? But, I mean, if we all did that, we'd just pack our bags and go home.
That's so, right.
So I think we have to be courageous and people said years ago, well, classical music is dead and the piano recital is dead, and we could have just believed them and given up. But
it certainly isn't.
But it's not dead, and I like to think that there is hope for the future of music, and as long as we have people who are willing to kind of fight for the cause and do whatever it takes to get the word out that that music is just it's not just a frill, it's not just a trapping or something or icing on the cake. And I think the message has to be gotten to the people in charge of education that this is something really essential to the human spirit. I can't imagine a life without music.
It's just, no, and with art in general, I guess. So, of course, it is a reflection of our civilization always
yeah.
has been. And as you say, inspiring words and comforting words, and I think very, very true.
So I think we have to not only teach the young to make music, but also educate them to know that it's very, very difficult, and they're going to have to kind of find their own way as best they can. But I think if they realize that and have the resources to do it,
there'll always be a place for it.
There'll always be a place, right.
Thank you, John Owings, for this lovely, lovely time with you, and we look forward to more unusual releases.
Good. I hope so, too. Thank you, Jill. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.